Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, Tuesdays and most Wednesdays at 1 p.m. And we are here to bring you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I was fortunate enough recently to fall upon some archives, some programs that I did in the past, interviews with people who were remarkable people. And I was pulling out parts of that, and I found one in particular that I found fascinating, which has to do with dealing with people who are withdrawn. Do you know anybody who's withdrawn? They just pull away, you can't get at them. The withdrawn type of personality. Well, about the best authorities on this were two people I know who were masters of what thing called the Enneagram, E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M, a system of study I think that was started by the Sufis that really helps us understand different types of people. Don Riso and Russ Hudson were the two who helped develop this most in a palatable way for me. Now, Don Riso died a few years ago, and he's a remarkable man. Russ Hudson continues on with the Enneagram Institute. Don and Russ were particularly knowledgeable, Don especially because he was one of these types. He knew about it from the inside. So, my friends, I would like to bring you an interview I did a few years ago with Don Riso and Russ Hudson.
Thank you, Armand.
Thank you.
Let's talk about this whole idea of being withdrawn. The whole idea of it, it's a strategy, you know?
Well, it's an unconscious strategy, of course, and it's a way that people have developed in childhood to cope with their environment, which for whatever reason, and there could be a million different reasons, people find overwhelming. So all three of the withdrawn types that we're going to talk about in different ways go into an inner world. They go and construct in their own minds and in their own hearts a place that feels safer and more in their own control. So in a way, you know, you could look at all three of these types as people who in different ways feel powerless and that they're looking for a way of feeling that I need to get in control of my own life.
Well, somewhere. we all, if you look at any of the types, there's a sense of powerlessness in all of it.
True.
One way of dealing with this powerlessness, is to hide.
Yes, to withdraw. Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of those people out there, the crustaceans, right? They just said, give me a shell, and I'll live inside my shell. That'll be my way rather than giving me the teeth to attack.
That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. And how this is experienced by a person who is doing it, if you're withdrawing, you generally don't experience it that I'm withdrawing necessarily. Everybody sometimes daydreams or is thinking about some problem in their mind or they fantasize. We all do that sometimes. But if you're one of these personality types, it's something you do a lot. You do more than most people. Mm-hmm. It's like where the action is inside me, in my imagination, really, much more often than in my real life. And, of course, this is a subtle thing. But again, I say this because the person who's doing it often doesn't recognize that they're withdrawing from people until it's pointed out externally.
But their focus of attention is going to be somewhere other than right out there in the physical world, in the immediate world with people. So one of the word that just comes to mind right now is that these types are avoiding often. Mm-hmm. You'll see this is a big characteristic of all three of these types is that they tend to avoid conflicts and tend to avoid kind of intense conflict and contact with other people if they can. Now, that's not always possible.
They don't mean to because they may be saying, I want to be close to people. I want to have friends.
Right.
I want to be. But there's something about them that tends to fall back to the security of me with me.
That's right.
Me with me. I remember someone who described it to me once, remembering very early on. In fact, I like your observation, Russ, that you made a little earlier. Let's talk about that, about death.
Yes.
And the withdrawn types. What did you find?
Well, I don't know if this is true about all the withdrawn types, but there are three withdrawn types, actually. We have the Enneagram type 5, the investigator, Enneagram type 4, the individualist, Enneagram type 9, the peacemaker. But what we found in interviewing a lot of people who were this Enneagram type 5 investigator is that many of them had a very, very early, very young recognition of death. there was some kind of a startling realization that, oh my gosh, Mommy and Daddy are going to die. Fluffy the dog is going to die. I'm going to die. Everything is going to go away. And it seems to set up this sort of withdrawing from any kind of investment in the outer world. The only thing that's safe is in my mind. The only thing that's safe is the part of me that's watching the external world. But mm-hmm. why bother getting really involved in anything that's out there, because it's all going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw that a lot of the people who are this investigator type really withdraw from any kind of active participation in the world. It's like there's all that world out there, and I've sort of sucked myself out of it.
So there we are. We begin talking about people who withdraw. Do you know anybody who's like that, or are you like that? Are you a person who can feel that, you know, the safety of your own bedroom mm-hmm. is the best place to be? The safety of your own bedroom, the place where you want to be, the your quiet place, you know? Is that where you want to be? Do you want to be your own writing? Do you want to be doing your stuff all by yourself? Or, in many cases, people who could be involved in their own private businesses, in their own world. So we're going to look at these withdrawn types today. We're going to look at the three different types. We're going to talk about this at length because I want you to understand it's just an adaptation. Like I said, if you look in the ocean, you're going to find the sharks, you're going to find the dolphins, and you're going to find the crustaceans.
The clams.
Right? Sure. Sure, and being a clam or being a crab is one way of being out there, you know? So we're going to talk about that. And I want to get started with this, Don. Let's talk about this first type, which you call the investigator,
right.
Which is, I think, the ideal description of that is the burrow, you know, the Franz Kafka burrow, which I recommend everybody read if they can get a collection of short stories. This five investigator, this person who... What are they like?
Well, they're people who very much are, I think, as Russ was saying, afraid of death. I think that's a big issue. But also they feel, as they look at themselves and the world, that the world is a very overwhelming place. The world and being a little organism in this vast universe is overwhelming to us and to our capacity to really feel confident to be here. So the five is that type that is looking for a sense of confidence that I can really relax and be in the world in a way that I feel safe and I feel secure. So it's a person who's looking for security but is actually kind of despaired of ever finding it.
It's the one type that looks withdrawn and is withdrawn. So in other words, if we're looking at the withdrawn types, we're going to find one that doesn't look withdrawn.
Right. So what happens with the five is that the five doesn't feel very safe in the world, so they withdraw into their minds. It's really simple. This is on just a very kind of crude way. This is for your intellectual type. This is the person who will just bury their noses in a book. Who you're going to see a lot of fives, I think, in reading rooms of libraries. You're going to see a lot of fives who do all kinds of research. It could be research in medical research, or it could be, you know, mathematics or science or whatever.
Or computers, I imagine.
Could be computers. Yeah. Absolutely. Anything that gives them a sense that this is my little world. This is something I can control. This is something I feel safe with, because I really don't feel safe with that big world out there. That's a big, scary place to be. And you never know what's going to hit you next. So if I can control my computer, if I can be a chess champion, or if I can really know about the Lord of the Rings in great detail, or if I can master a guitar or piano or something, then I've got something that I can feel is a way that I can be in the world.
This is a person who might do wonderful work at doing things like telephone repair or repair of some kind, or working, but is not going to be your best receptionist.
Exactly. Not necessarily.
Not your frontline salesperson.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You know, you might go to a five for sales if some very complicated, if you're buying a complicated software program or computer or something like that, you might want that kind of expertise.
Mm-hmm. But a technician would be.
Exactly. And it's not always scientific. It could be, yes, it could be bicycle or car repair. It could be a lot of fives might be artists, very focused on developing their own particular kind of writing or music. But the thing is, it's a person who spends more time than most in solitary pursuits. I'm not a team player in this position. I'm a person who really likes to immerse myself intensely in an almost fiery way in whatever I'm doing. I'm passionate about my interests, and I don't want any disruptions or disturbance while I'm in that very focused place. And so fives actually will have, generally speaking, less contact than most people.
Well, some people, when they're in this withdrawn place, they could either be very disturbed because they could just be private people. I mean, you could have somebody who is up there somewhere in the forest and they just said, I'm going to live in a forest and I'm not going to be with humans. I'm not going to have much contact. Mm-hmm. And they're okay. They're okay. So the question is, now we have levels of development. And this is what I think you two bring to the Enneagram that I think is so important. You say there are levels of development of it. So at the best place, a five, this kind of withdrawn personality that looks withdrawn. If you look at them, they look withdrawn. You will rarely say to yourself, you know, they may not even be aware of being withdrawn, but they will look withdrawn. What kind of examples would you have of people who are out there in the world who are fives? Well, that's kind of a contradiction, isn't it? It's almost an oxymoron. Who's out there in the world that's a five? But we know.
Well, I think actually there are lots of them because what they do is the way they get back into contact with people is to focus on their work. So the way that you'll see fives really reattaching to the human community and the human family is through the sort of things that they do. So you see a lot of film directors, say, for instance, I'm thinking of Tim Burton and
David Lynch
and Monty Python, say, is a good example. There are a lot of comedians and humorists and people like Gary Larson.
Well, wait, that doesn't make any sense to me now. How could a comedian...
Well,
somebody standing up, humorous.
Yeah, and often, like as I said, Monty Python, the whole Monty Python troupe is a very five-ish phenomenon.
I don't think any of those individuals are fives, the humor is. But Gary Larson's a better example because, again, he's not standing up doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He created cartoons that he did on his own and put them out there for people to enjoy. Or film directors. I'm making the movie, but I'm not the guy in front of the camera.
Stanley Kubrick would be a good example.
Yeah.
Somebody who was this type of person said the investigator. And we call it the investigator because they are usually investigating, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking about everything. They function highly from the mind. Is that true?
That's true.
That's why you call it the investigator. Other right. names that have been used
well,
for it?
Well, the observer.
Mm-hmm.
But the trouble is that other types observe as well, especially nines. Type nine, the peacemaker, also observes. This is another withdrawn type we'll talk about. So that got a little fuzzy for people. But the thing that's really interesting about the five is that they investigate and also ask, well, why is it the way it is? Why are there clouds? Why is the grass green? Why do we need to go from A to B to C? Why can't we go from A to L and then back to X or something like that? Why does it have to be this way? So the five is really that person who's not taking anything for granted, who is using their mental and their observational powers as a way of really finding how does the world work.
So it must be very difficult for them to make decisions.
Often.
I mean, decision-making must be a real difficult thing to do because you've got so much information. You know, one of the easy ways of making decisions is on an instinct.
Yes.
Right? You get a certain amount of information and you say, okay, I'll take my shot.
That's right.
But if you're so filled with information, sorry to interrupt, you get so filled with information, it must make it very difficult.
Exactly. This is why doing things, moving from the world of thought into the world of action is very difficult for Type 5. Exactly so, because they see so many options, so many possibilities, so many alternative explanations that are possible that, you know, it's becomes ambiguous. It's everything, they begin to kind of get overloaded with too much information.
Yeah. The other thing is that you never stop asking questions. It's not like you get to a question and then there's an answer and you're satisfied and that's it. One keeps asking the questions. And the other thing about
this... So why is the sky blue? Well, that's because it reflects something out of the sea. Well, why is that reflection there, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what makes that reflection happen? So this is the question that doesn't end.
Exactly. And why is the sky actually not always blue? It is actually sometimes pink and it's sometimes orange and it's sometimes black. And, I mean, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And every question... reveals other questions. Exactly. It's an infinite sort of regression that they get into.
People who are a woman who described being this kind of withdrawn personality, she said, you know, I sit in my cave And I see the whole world as being something that wants to take energy from me mm-hmm. and talks about the energy exchange. She talks about how the energy kind of comes to her and there's an exchange of energy that takes place. She says, if people invade my space, I feel like they're robbing me of energy. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to dole it out. I want to be the master of the energy exchange. I don't want anybody to be able to invade me. So that's why they're kind of hiding out. In fact, that's why they won't wear real lavish clothing, because they don't want somebody approaching them. That's why they won't be, you know, they'll be much more private all the time. And there's something about them that says stay away.
Well,
that's right.
That actually is very interesting, because that is goes to the whole idea of the capital sin or the passion of type 5, which is avarice. And the idea here is that the five is hoarding. Five feels small. The five's self-image, the investigator's self-image, is that I am too small to be in the world. I don't have enough power. I don't have enough energy. And so what I have to do is hold on to the little that I have. It's not so much a greediness of going out and grabbing for more, that we're going to see that in another type, but it's I have just a little bit for myself, and I better hold on to it so that nobody can take it away.
Kind of reminds me of what you said, Russ, a little earlier about death, you know? Once you perceive death, and maybe that's what happens when you're a child, you perceive death and you say to yourself, it's here and it may be really soon, so I'm going to hold on to what's left.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. You know?
I think also connected with that holding on is it's very related to the search for knowledge, the idea knowledge is power, right? I'm just thinking a very five-ish phenomena that's in our culture right now is the whole Harry Potter series.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What is the Harry Potter series about?
Well, the author of these books, these very popular children's books, J.K. Rowling, we feel is a type five, an investigator herself, and she's lived a pretty solitary existence creating this whole world with all the different creatures and powers and the rules of magic and sorcery. And it's a story about a little boy, Harry Potter, who is a five, who right from the get-go, his parents are killed by an evil magician, a sorcerer, and he then embarks on this journey of discovering the art of sorcery. There's this whole hidden world that he has to learn about and discover to fulfill his birthright and to find power and to escape the dreadful circumstances of his the family that he was left with.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to look at Rowling's life as we know it now. She was a mother who was trying to raise a very young child. And the detachment here was her ability to survive. It gave her an ability to really live in a chaotic world. She had very, very little money. And her ability to immerse herself in her writing, she would go into a library or a restaurant and sit there for hour after hour after hour, nursing a cup of coffee while she wrote her manuscript. That kind of reclusive ability to make a cave around oneself, to hold one's own energy, and in that cave to create this whole world, was what she did for several years before she emerged from the cave with these incredible manuscripts.
It's kind of an interesting thing. How long have these been around? In case those of you are not familiar with this, just a short while ago, these books emerged, right?
This is the fourth.
Yeah, I think, right now the fourth book is contemporary. I think the first one came out in 1997.
But that didn't grab the people as much as it did later on.
It's been building incredibly fast.
Yes.
And what are the statistics on this? It sold more books than the Bible or something?
The newest book is the fastest selling book in history. It's sold out its entire first printing of 3.9 million copies, something crazy like that. And it's a real phenomenon. I think because there's something archetypal at root of all of the types. All of them represent something that all of us relate to in some way. And I think she's really powerfully touched onto the whole mythos of the five mindset.
Be aware of this, my friends. If you're listening, this is going to get bigger and even much bigger. The children are reading these books. They are buying these books. Every child feels like they want to have this book. They are telling their parents, I want to have that rather than a toy. Imagine what's going to happen to poor children as they begin doing this thing called reading.
Well, I think what is the mythos that this is touching? I think it really has to do with this sense of powerlessness that all of us on some level, whoever we are, feel like we're powerless children. We feel like we've been thrown into a world that is aggressive, it is destructive, it is something that can destroy us. And we need to find something that we can master ourselves. And the Harry Potter myth is that he has the secret power. He is a wizard. He is somebody who can tap into our energies, and he just has to learn consciously how to do it. And I think it's a very powerful message that we all need to learn. And that's why it's really tapping into millions of people.
The other thing about it, and this whole Harry Potter story or series touches on this too, it's really about the whole phenomena of geekdom. The five is the geek. The five is the kid.
The ultimate outsider.
The ultimate outsider, the person who wears the funny glasses, the person who's last to get picked for the softball team, the one who, because of this withdrawn style and intense focus on whatever that person, child, is interested in, be it math or sorcery, as a result, I have never developed other social skills. I don't know how to relate to the other kids. I don't know how to be with people. And the longer that goes on, of course, the more isolated the person becomes and the more intensely they focus on their interest. And sometimes that leads to good stuff. Sometimes you get Harry Potter books, or you get people discovering things about DNA, or you get a startling movie or new art form. But sometimes it just leads to people leaving very isolated, eccentric lives.
Some famous people who were fives?
Well, gosh, I mean, in the scientific world, Albert Einstein is kind of like the quintessential five, but that's the scientific five. Another scientific five that comes to mind is Stephen Hawking. I mean, there couldn't be a more apt example of somebody who is a mind, his body literally almost doesn't exist. He's just a shriveled entity. His mind is incredible, though. That's really an archetype.
But is he withdrawn? I thought he was pretty public.
He's very private. He's very reclusive, and he's totally focused on his work. And that's the main thing, you see.
Uh-huh.
And it depends on the level of health. Healthy fives can be very sociable. In fact, there's a kind of a false idea in the Enneagram world about fives being stingy and uncommunicative. We don't really think that that's true at all. It depends on the level. Yeah, a healthier five, a person who is really passionate about their work and knows a lot about what they're talking about, loves to share their ideas. They love to get out and talk to people. Anyone who wants to listen to them will have a field day with a five.
Yeah.
But as they go down the levels, they become more reclusive and more, as Russ was saying, their social skills become less and less usable, and they tend to withdraw too much.
I have an Albert Einstein story for you. Albert Einstein was laying a little place, a concrete, outside his house, in his little house. There was a chip in the concrete, and he was laying this concrete, and suddenly the kids come along, and they're jumping in the cement to make their little marks, you know, and he's chasing them away, and then they come back, and he chases them away again, and he yells at them, and his wife says, Albert, you've always loved children. Why are you yelling at these children? And he said, because I love children in the abstract, but not in the concrete.
Okay.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We are here trying to tell you about different things. You know, what happens if you combine Viagra with ginkgo? You get ginkgo Viagra, it kind of reminds you what's hard in life. If we're here trying to bring you some ideas, people who are withdrawn in their own world, that's one of the levels of it. One of them that you're going to see is this type, which is called the investigator. You know it by now. I hope we've described it enough to you. It's the investigator. I don't like the word geek. I don't know where it ever came from. It always seems like a pejorative, but, you know, it's that person with the glasses who's studying their little machines and becoming masters of very small things that very few people would not become masters of. It's the person who's kind of socially difficult because they don't know really about relating to people. They know about relating to things and relating to their own world, you know, their own mind. and their own ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, now, do they have a very active fantasy life?
Absolutely.
Yes, they do. And all of the withdrawn types have active fantasy lives, but they're very different. What they fantasize about is very different. Fives have, how shall I put this, a dark fantasy life. It's like, what is the unthinkable thing? What's the taboo thing? And my mind will go there. It's a lot of horror writers, actually, are...
I'm speaking of comic book people, you
Yeah,
know.
Some comic books could be of this type, but certainly the whole imagery of horror, Stephen King...
Edgar Allan Poe,
Well, Edgar Allan Poe was more of the four, which we'll see later. There's a kind of a gothic lushness to the four's imagination. Not so the five. The five is more like, I don't know, the film The Matrix is very five.
Alien.
The Alien movies and that art of the man who created the alien, H.R. Giger. The very dark sort of melding of machinery and strange animals, monsters, science gone wrong, worlds blowing up. You know, a lot of computer games are five.
What's the most beautiful thing about the five? If you're going to tap into the beauty of the five and their ability to be withdrawn, what are you going to find? You're going to find a lot of genius. You're going to find a lot of possibility of genius, a lot of possibility of really deep thought. If you want to share something intellectually with someone, it is somebody who could explore with you and investigate with you. If you're lucky enough to get close to them, meaning you're going to have to do some work and love them closely, it could be a very intense relationship, I imagine.
That's very true,
yes.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, we have to say that IQ, or intelligence in itself, is not just simply the domain of five. All the nine types can have high IQs or low IQs or average IQs. So it's not just that all fives are geniuses. So we want to make that really clear. However, of course, the five does turn to the life of the mind or the life of a search for mastery and expertise. So as we said earlier, that could be, well, it could be learning how to play the guitar really well, or it could be learning a lot about comic books. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a genius. But what I love about the five is there's a certain purity about them. There's a certain innocence. They are so focused on their thing that I admire the purity and the simplicity of heart that you see. There's like a kind of a childlike enthusiasm that they have for whatever they're doing. I think it's beautiful. Right. I think that's a really marvelous thing about the five.
I'm a little prejudiced because this is my type, so I it's hard for me to be objective about it.
So that's here you see it. You see, now there you are, Russ. This is your type.
Yes.
And
there's a passion here, too.
There's a passion to your being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm fairly exemplary here, but I think, yes, I'm deeply passionate about the things that I'm focused on, be that my interests, for sure, or... I think fives are that way about the people they love, but that list is usually pretty short.
Your knowledge of the Enneagram and your knowledge of yourself being a five, how has that helped you step out of the fixation of it?
Well,
what do you watch yourself do and say, I'm not going to do that?
One of the main things I've learned is how important it is for me to be, how shall I put this, embodied, to really feel myself here physically. So I exercise... And when I do that, I feel more confident to be engaged with people socially. When I don't, I start to develop, you know, social phobias. I start to withdraw. I get more isolated. And so for me, staying grounded through physical activity, through things that allow me to feel the life, the energy, the life force of my body, sort of eight-like qualities, helps me to really be more balanced as a human being. I don't lose my mental thing. I don't lose my focus, but it sort of rounds out the whole picture and makes it possible for me to interact more happily with other human beings.
Well, that's actually true for all the withdrawn types. One of the main things that we could tell our listeners that all the withdrawn types need to get into their bodies, actually have to get out of their minds or of their emotional turmoil and re-engage with the world and get regrounded in reality. That's a major lesson.
Well, you know, you could say that, but and then you could tell them, you know, get out there with people too,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a horrifying thought. So I think you're right. You know, maybe exercise, it may be working out, it may be just developing your body and keeping in touch with your body may be the way to do it. This is Armand DeMille. We're with Don Riso and Russ Hudson, who are with the Enneagram Institute here in New York, Enneagram, E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M. I mention that because I've gotten so many emails from people saying, how do you spell this thing? We'll be back in just a little bit. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the other withdrawn types.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand Jamiro on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
Hi, this is Julian Gioiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI. I'm 20 years old, and I'm a student at NYU, and I live in New York City. And I want to shout out to the other young listeners of WBAI. We have to help keep the station going, and the easiest way to do it is through the WBAI Buddy System. If you donate as little as $10 a month, you have proactively promoted free speech radio. Go to the website, WBAI.org, click the donate button, and make a difference.
This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. We're listening to an interview, an archive, with the late Don Riso and Russ Hudson, and an exciting interview about withdrawn personality types. Or people who tend to withdraw, because the next one we're going to talk about doesn't at all look like a withdrawn type of personality very frequently, but they are. They're isolated, I know that. And we're going to talk about the next personality, which I think you call, what do you call this, Don?
The peacemaker. Type 9 is the peacemaker.
A peacemaker. Now, this is, what I like about this is, this is almost, if you're in the new age or you're into developing new things or alternative medicine, you're going to run into the peacemaker all the time. Here's a person, as I'm going to describe it, that appears like they're there completely. In fact, it seems like they are so there, they're totally with you when you meet them, and that there's a glaze over them. There's kind of a, it's almost like they were hypnotized to be on the spot, but you don't notice it because they could serve your needs. If you're a needy person and you run into a peacemaker, the beauty of it is you don't see that they're in this dull zone. You don't see this glossing over of the eyes. You see how they will feed your need because they will in many ways. Mm-hmm. One of the things I know about this personality is how well, how wonderful it is that it is always calming, it is always relaxing. Let's talk about it. Go ahead.
Right. Well, the peacemakers are really interesting because, as you say, Armand, they are there, but as we all are in our own different ways, they find a way to try to make the world a nicer place, a safer place, a more mellow place. I think if there's one word I would use for the type 9, the peacemaker, is this mellow, spacious, undemanding kind of quality that they give to people. So people love to be around type 9s because there's something that's so unjudgmental, uncritical about them. They're just there in a very loving kind of positive way. And they have this capacity to chill people out, to make people feel very safe.
Well, that's the purpose of it, isn't it?
Yeah. And,
I mean, isn't that the purpose? That purpose of
what's how nines want to be themselves. Peacemakers want to be. They don't want. They don't want the boat rocked. They don't want to be disturbed. They like things on an even keel, and so they like to exert that influence on the environment. Let's all just mellow out. Let's take it easy. As you were saying, a lot of the sort of new age movement and a lot of holistic stuff that we encounter, some of it, of course, is very valid and very helpful for waking people up. But I see a lot of also a tendency to kind of hypnotize people in a certain way into this kind of, let's all trance out together. A lot of visualization stuff, you know, picture yourself on a beach. The breeze is blowing. You can feel the sand under your feet. And suddenly you're out of it, you know? But a lot of people, I think, confuse that kind of trance state for an awakened consciousness.
Yes, it kind of looks like a spiritual consciousness, you know?
Yeah, well, the nine lead, the whole thing for the nine, if the five has this inner world, these concepts, what we call the inner tinker toy, the nine creates what we call an inner sanctum, a safe place, an easy place where no one tells me what to do, where I can just be however I want, where the problems of the world don't get to me.
Well, I think that's the key right there, is that the nine goes inward into this inner sanctum where nothing unhappy, unsafe, painful can really get to me. And so they turn their attention on pleasant thoughts, on that that beach house or that memory from their childhoods or their love for their pet or an idealized relationship that they have and focus their attention very much on the positive. So this is a very much a positive outlook sort of person, somebody who's optimistic and who is looking on the bright side of things and wants to kind of cheer people up and make the world a happier place.
It sounds like such a nice way to be.
Well, of course it is. But the trouble is that it doesn't take the full spectrum of reality into consideration. There are problems in the world. There could be real problems in a relationship. There could be problems at a job or something. And the nine, and I have to say all of us have a component part of this, that the nine part of us would say, oh, it's too much trouble. Let's think about it tomorrow. Let's get back to that some other time. Or maybe if we wait long enough, things will take care of themselves. We don't have to really worry about
stuff. They won't address the problems. And they also are not aware of their own anger when they feel it.
Absolutely.
That's right.
That's right.
I mean, it's like not only are they asleep to many of the things that are happening around, but kind of asleep to their own anger primarily. And you can see full cultures. I mean, when I go to the Caribbean, very often I see this nine look, mm-hmm. this look yes. of smiling, very pleasing, or even in the country India, you know, not to generalize that much, you see a lot of this nine-ishness. You know, this kind of way of being that's pleasant, but not really there. Now, again, I must say, what I find so seductive about this is that if you are needy, the nine is ready to be there for you because they see everybody's point of view. And one of the things I notice is in romantic relationships, they could bond like crazy glue. That they could meet with you and then they see exactly what you want. Unlike the other personality that always relates to people's needs, this is the one that is going to create a relationship with somebody so intense, so big, so involved at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. That it could seem like you finally found love. And then suddenly you look and you're dealing with the skin of the snake, but not the snake itself. Suddenly there's a missing inner part that's not there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are drawn to nines precisely because nines are unthreatening. They're easy. They make space. I feel safe. I feel supported. By being in the presence of a nine, it just seems like this is wonderful. This is like a gift from heaven. But then what usually happens later on, two things happen. One is that the person in the relationship with the nine, exactly as you said, starts to notice, wait a minute, I need your involvement, nine. I need to connect with you. I want to have intimacy. I want to, and somehow once the relationship is established in the nine's mind, the real one kind of gets neglected. It's like I can take you for granted now, and I'll just be here, and I'll watch TV, and I'll read my books, or I'll write in my journal, or whatever I'm doing. But and as long as it's in my mind, everything's great. I don't have to deal with you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Just an image came to mind when you're talking there, Russ. When you're in a relationship with a nine, the problem is there isn't much relating. There is this kind of amorphous atmosphere of acceptance and peace and harmony, but there isn't a kind of a one-on-one real engagement. It's the image I had is of like playing tennis by yourself. You know, there isn't going to be anybody to bounce the ball back to you.
Unless you're somebody who wants to imagine that person is involved with you, as many people do in relationships, yes. When we're going to talk about one of the other types soon, which can easily create in another person what you want. So if you're going to imagine that this person's attention and their peacefulness around you is love, this is an easy one to do it with.
Yes.
Because you can imagine whatever you want about them, and it's going to kind of seem that way at first. But then they hold their own line. They don't really give much room. You can't really tell someone who is this type of person, the peacemaker, to change their spots because they're not going to do it. They're very solid where they are.
That's right. This, what one doesn't see in this personality type at first look is that there's a tremendous stubbornness, a lot of strength here, much more than anyone notices initially on the outside, and much more than nines themselves usually realize. But what happens in relationships especially is that nines start to, in order to keep the peace, they just start going along with things. It's the whole phenomena of, where would you like to go to dinner tonight, honey? And then the nine responds usually, oh, I don't care. Wherever you want is fine with me. What? Where do you want to go for vacation? I don't care. Pick something. I'm sure it'll be great. And on the surface, maybe nines are doing that to just get along with the spouse, to not, again, create conflicts, not have waves. But underneath the surface, this person is getting angry because probably, maybe subconsciously at least, they do have preferences. Maybe my spouse decided we should go to Florida, but, you know, I really wanted to go to the Grand Canyon.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking with Don Riso and Russ Hudson, authors of the Enneagram books, many of them which are available, and the head of the Enneagram Institute. We're lucky to have them by here. They drop in and out of town, and then they go to different parts of the world, give seminars, lectures, teaching this rather new typology. So the thing that we have to look at is when we see this peaceful, wonderful, calm thing, this thing we're looking at, we want to know, is that person at home or not?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what I was thinking too, Armin, is that how is this a withdrawn type? Because we're talking about withdrawn types here. Well, they're withdrawn in the sense that, are they home? Are they at the front door? No, the nine is that part of us too that says, oh, it's too much trouble to really arise in my own life. It's too much trouble to be here. It's too much trouble. It's too scary. It's too overwhelming to completely individuate and be present in my own life. There are scary things. There are things I'm going to lose. There are disappointing things in life. And I'd rather not do that. It's painful. So I'd rather kind of withdraw into this fantasy self, the inner sanctum, this more pleasant place to be, and turn a blind eye on those things in my world that would upset that. So it is withdrawn, but not physically withdrawn. And whereas we were saying the type five, the investigator, is that detached person who literally will go live in the mountains or literally will, you know, be reclusive and stay in their apartment for 6 weeks at a time. Not the nine. The nine is going to be out among people, but not fully engaged, not present, not right there.
It's like
there
a turtle, you know, in a kind of way, yes. Because mm-hmm. it's present, but there's a shell. But you don't see
the
shell.
It's an invisible shell.
It's an invisible shell.
That's yes. the thing.
It's Armand DeMille. Good. Let's move on to the next. Yeah, let's get on to that, okay? Let's get on to that because we're not going to. I don't want to run out of time. The most, the precious four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's talk about that personality.
Well, type four is another withdrawn type. It's the third withdrawn type, and we call this type
the individualist.
The individualist, excuse me. We've changed the names a couple of times. This is also the artistic type. This is the romantic type of person. And they withdraw, I think, in withholding is maybe a better word. This is the type of person who says, my feelings are hurt. You don't understand me. I want a relationship with you. I long for some connection with you, but you're not meeting my needs. So I am so misunderstood by this that I'm going to withdraw from you. And in my withdrawal, in my withholding myself, then you'll see what you're missing. Then you'll notice that I'm not here anymore. So there's a lot more anger.
Make somebody pull their hair out with that.
Well, there's the kind of like, I want you, and then as soon as we have a problem, then I'm withdrawing away from you. So the four is very much, much more a kind of flamboyant, much more a kind of right out there with their emotional reactions. The five and the nine, as we've seen so far, that's much more disguised. That's much more in the background. The four is that kind of hysterical kind of quality to them.
Based on their emotions, they are the richest types. They are the artist, mm-hmm. right? You'll see many artists. You'll see a lot of very creative people. That's the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. Deeply, when you say involved in fantasy, they could create wonderful things just from their own fantasy mm-hmm. in the world, things that are out there, not just, you know, little repair things, but more.
Well, I think what's really unique about the four is that they actually use their emotional turmoil as the sort of
grist,
the raw material for their artistic creations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very autobiographical, very confessional. So you get somebody like Tennessee Williams. You get somebody like Eugene O'Neill, who is going to write a play about his family life. You know, Long Day's Journey Into Night was his family.
Yeah, the musician Joni Mitchell. A great example of this type. Again, you get her, the whole history of her love life and her ups and downs in her CDs or albums over the years. You kind of knew who she was dating, how it went. That's the very particular thing. I think any of the nine types can be creative or artistic. You can get anything from an eight, like Pablo Picasso, to you can get a, I don't know, a,
seven,
certainly
like
five artists.
Steven Spielberg.
Or Mozart.
Mozart,
right.
Yeah.
But so fours, just because a person is artistic doesn't mean that they're a four personality. But it's this quality of confession, of revealing my feelings, of here's my life and on the here's my blood on these pages. This
and
is
because
how
I feel it, it's real.
Yes.
Because I feel it, this is the reality.
Right.
Which is, I think, the curse of the four. In other words, I think that's what holds them back, mm-hmm. believing because they are filled with this thing.
Well, it goes back to the childhood, of course, and the fact is the four felt very misunderstood, not seen by their own parents, you see, feeling very abandoned and alone. So what happens is the four, when they're very young, turns to their feelings and says, how do I feel? Who am I? What is my place in life? Why do I feel like nobody likes me, nobody wants me? So the four is always introspecting on their feelings. So they get caught in that trap, and they feel that if I lose touch with my feelings, then I lose touch with my ground. My feelings are the building block of who I am.
We're talking about the third of a series of three, which are called the withdrawn types. Withdrawn in one way or another. Now, this third one, the four, one of my favorite types, is somebody who is also called a romantic. Now, there's kind of a mistake in the word romantic, isn't it? Because it's romantic, but it's not. What if you think about it in many ways, they are romantic in one sense, but it's not about romance and love. It is not these are the people most capable of loving because they could also be very removed from love.
Yes. There's this, it's really about the longing for these things. It's not necessarily, this is not your happy-go-lucky, in love person. This isn't Valentine's Day. This is longing. This is sort of the person who's thinking, why didn't I get a Valentine? There's this longing for love. And
longing and yearning are important parts of this.
Very much so. A lot of times, even when fours are in a relationship, they will still feel this kind of longing, melancholy, feeling like
enough.
Somehow I'm not seen adequately. There's a lot of frustration in this type about not being recognized, about not being seen for the unique individual being that I am. And I think part of the withdrawn thing here, too, is a pattern that gets set up in childhood. It's something that I think all kids do sometimes, but fours just continue to do it. It's the whole thing that sometimes when we're just happy or we're doing a drawing or something, we bring it to mommy and daddy. They're preoccupied. Their dad's watching the game or mom is working in the kitchen or whatever's going on. So children learn if I have a problem or if I sulk or if I pull away from mommy or daddy or if I go hide, if they come find me, if they address my distress, then I've got their attention and therefore their love.
It reinforces it. So if the four is suddenly upset, they'll go in the other room and slam the door.
Yes.
And that'll get the attention of the mate. And if it doesn't get the attention, it's okay because they've got a safe place to be.
Yes.
Inside their own world.
Well, and not only that, it also it reinforces the negative feelings. You see, feelings are feelings. For the four, positive feelings, negative feelings, it doesn't almost matter. I mean, it's nice to feel positively, but the fours almost are suspicious of that. A good negative feeling, a good resentment, a good feeling, oh, nobody understands me, nobody wants me, people don't love me, they can get a lot of mileage out of that. And so a negative feeling...
What does it do? Because when you run into people who are like this and you see them dig a hole for themselves... What are they doing in there?
Well, it's reinforcing their identity. Their identity is I am my feelings, and my feelings are telling me who I am. I am a person who is misunderstood.
So just like somebody who's a control freak might exercise control to feel like they are something because control is their essence.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody else who is who is really withdrawn of the five type that you mentioned may pull all the way into their little spot and, you know, and create, you know, get involved involved in research because that's who they see themselves as being. The four needs the deep pain, the anguish.
The drama of this.
If I wasn't suffering, who would I be?
Exactly. It's just the reverse of the nine. It's very interesting. All the types are going to reinforce.
What do you mean the reverse of the nine?
Well, in the sense that they are going to the nine is going to reinforce its identity by being mellow, by being having no big emotional reactions. The more mellow and calm I am, that's how I know I'm who I am.
Yeah.
The four, just the reverse, the four is upping the ante constantly, is upping the emotional temperature, and has to keep that going in order to feel like I exist.
A way that this often shows up is something we call replay mode. So like if you're a four, and you've just had a conversation. Let's say I've just talked with a friend, and we've had a lovely conversation, and she happened to say to me, you know, I really like your new haircut. You really look handsome in that haircut. If I'm a good four, I'll walk away from that conversation, and I'll start to replay it in my mind, and I'll start sifting through it for things that will trigger these kind of feelings. It's not that I consciously do that. It's just what happens. So I'll start to say, oh, well, she said that she likes my new haircut. Did she think my hair was ugly before? Maybe she didn't like my clothes. You know, I don't think she likes me at all. And then one's off and running and caught in this kind of fantasy about what the relationship was, who I am, how I'm not understood. And fours, in order to sort of nurture and keep the fire of these feelings going, begin to withdraw from contact with people. It's also, if you're trying to keep your feelings stirred up and have these romantic, artistic senses of oneself, it starts to create difficulties in just doing day-to-day functioning. You know, it's very hard to work in a bank or a computer company or something if you're sitting being preoccupied with romantic longings or feeling misunderstood. To keep that going, you can't get seriously engaged in things that have nothing to do with the self-image questions or the feeling or relationship issues that my mind is focused on.
Right. Well, there's another related idea here, too, is that the four, because of their emotionality and because they're so sensitive, they become hypersensitive. So they have to withdraw in order to protect their sensitivities. The more they take every single thing that people say and do, the fact that maybe somebody cuts in line on a bus or somebody else gets a bigger piece of cheese at the grocery store or God knows what, then the four feels slighted very easily. There's a lot of being, feeling like everybody in the world doesn't like me and is rejecting me. So fours tend to withdraw from just any kind of contact with people because contact with people is dangerous. It's dangerous to my emotional equilibrium, which the four always, when they're in the lower, average to lower levels, always feels is very fragile. There's feels, a key word for them is vulnerability. They feel very vulnerable. That's how they feel themselves.
So how do you love someone who's in that place? When they're in their lower level and they feel so vulnerable and they feel withdrawn,
mm-hmm.
and they feel, you know, and you're on the other side of it and they're trying to say to you, come on, give to me, and if you give to me, maybe you're going to make me feel better, but I'm not going to let you get to me.
Well, one thing comes to mind right away, because this is my type too, I'm a type four, is that if you can give the four an ability to allow them just to cathart, to say what's on their minds. Their emotions are their truth. Their emotions are their reality. And if you can make the distinction between, okay, this is how this person feels versus the truth or not. Let's put the truth aside. Let's put objectivity aside. Let's just allow the person to say what's on their minds and how they feel. Because one of the things that the four really dislikes and feels very much put upon by is people telling him, oh, shut up, that's enough, we don't want to hear that. Well, that's enough of that, you're acting like a child, something like that. That is the kiss of death to the four and to relationships. There has to be the trust that I can open up my heart, that I can say what's on my mind, and I won't be rejected, I won't be humiliated, I won't be ridiculed in some way for having these feelings. And even the four might know, you know, I think this could be crazy. I think I could be wrong. I think these feelings may not be right on target, but this is how I feel.
Don, do you ever explain that to people that you know about you? Have you ever gone to the point where you've actually said, you know something, I may not be right, but since this is my type, let me explain a secret about me?
I have, yeah, and it's helped.
You've been listening to an interview, a past interview with Don Riso, the late Don Riso, and his associate, Russ Hudson, from the Enneagram Institute. And they've been talking about people who tend to withdraw and what it's like to love them, be one of them. Hey, my friends, I'll be back with you soon. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org or to thepositivemind.com. Do send me an email. Let me know your responses. Be back with you soon.
Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on. Feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, hey, you've got to hide your. Got to hide your love away. How can I even try? I can never win. Hearing them, seeing them in the state I'm in. How could she say to me, love will find a way. Gather round, all you clowns, let me hear you say, hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.